Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 124. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And, summer movie season is here, guys. And this week, we are talking about a movie that had a lot of pressure put on it, I think, to be...
Yeah.
It seemed like...
For a variety of reasons.
Yeah, for lots of reasons, but I just... Like, looking at the Twitterverse this weekend, it was very much, like, the future of women as, like, a gender, like, relied on the success of this movie, which I think is kind of unfair. But it's like people pinned a lot of their hopes and dreams onto, obviously, the big movie we're reviewing this week, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So we both went and saw it. You know me with superhero movies. I'm kind of... sick of them.
Fair.
I went because of the reviews. And yeah, this movie is kind of telling the origin story of Wonder Woman. She lives on this like mythical island.
The island of Thermacia, I believe.
Yeah. It kind of exists in this bubble in the ocean somewhere. And a World War I pilot crash lands there. She becomes aware of the outside world, and it's her call to be a hero. She goes out to try to stop World War I with Chris Pine. That's the basic gist of it, right?
Well, yes. Well, specifically, she is her island is been shielded by the god Zeus, and she is. The god of war, Ares, is who she believes is behind World War I.
Yeah. So
she's not necessarily going to stop World War I. She's going to kill Ares and stop the war.
It's kind of one and the same. But,
yes.
And we'll get into the whole Ares part, I think, when we start talking spoilers on this, because I have some thoughts on that. And I'm sure you do, too. But yes. I don't know. It's just like a surface level. Or whatever. Like, how'd you feel about this movie?
I like this movie.
Yeah.
It is in a era of superhero movies that are sarcastic and not necessarily mean spirited, but snarky when they are funny or super dark.
Yeah.
Gritty. This is, and it's funny because a lot of it takes place in like a very gray tone.
Yeah.
But this is a very like light movie. It's a very bright movie. It's not lighthearted, but it is a bright movie. It's a very hopeful movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily play with that. That
it's not going. Snark. I was just gonna say it's not going for gritty or edgy, and
right.
I was interested actually to hear your reaction to that because I know that you're a fan of what they've been doing with the DC movies, which like when you take Man of Steel, which I like as well. I like Man of Steel quite a bit.
Yeah,
they take a very different take on Superman in that where he's supposed to be this guy who sees. The good in humans and wants to help us.
Right. And he is like the, in the, especially in like the first Christopher Reeve movie, he is kind of portrayed as the best of humanity, even though he's an alien. Like,
yeah,
he has been brought up middle America, those values. And he is a, He is kind of portrayed as the epitome of that as an alien, and he brings hope to other people that, humanity is worth saving. I like what they did in Man of Steel, though, where they kind of made him more human and gave him flaws. That was one of my biggest problems with the Christopher Reeve movies.
Like a big, I would say one of the big, points, like the thesis of Man of Steel is his dad telling him, if they find out who and what you are, they will hate you. They will want to kill you. You have to hide who you are. And I found that super interesting. And I like, you know, I like complexity and I like darkness in these movies. Like, I love, like, my favorite, which I'll probably bring up a couple times in this review, is The Dark Knight. Like, that's it's an adult movie.
Right.
And it's complex and it's not simple black and white. This movie, though, so it's weird because, like, I'm kind of with you in a way. Like, I like the darker. I'm totally fine with these movies going for darker tone. In fact, I think Marvel is too light sometimes.
Yeah, well, that was something that I've been reading and like commenting on some like blogs and reviews and one of the complaints I'm hearing from people about Marvel is that. Like they have kind of gone, they've become very formulaic, which we have
talked about. I was just going to say, yeah.
But also, they rely really heavily on like that, like witty one-liner, snarky, like comeback, common, like, and the humor isn't natural. It doesn't feel, it feels forced in a lot of ways. And here, like, and this is a fish out of water tale for a lot of it,
yeah.
Where a lot of the humor comes from. But it's also like there's this like naive innocence that Diana has, and the reactions from those around her is where the humor comes from. But it's not like played like snarky and sarcastic towards her. She's not played as a joke, because she's certainly not.
No, I think it's part of where the heart comes from in this movie. And I think that it's really weird because – in many ways, for me, Wonder Woman goes back to basic, like very basic.
Yes.
Hero story. It's about a hero seeing what's good in us, and they're there to protect us. And which is weird, because if every movie in the last 10 years would be like that, it'd be very tired and very stale and very dated. And here we are going back to a very basic formula, and it feels fresh because we've seen so many of these complex, you know, like, you know, gray area movies, you know, where here it's just very much like, this is a character who, if she sees something going wrong in the world, she will stop whatever she's doing. She'll put her mission on halt and correct that wrong in the world. I think it feels fresh just because we haven't seen it in so long. And also I feel like it's something that we crave at this point in our world, because we're in dark times.
Yeah. And I don't know. Look, I liked Batman vs. Superman. We had this talk last year. I don't hate that movie, but it is a dark, like, it is a dark look at those characters. It is a dark world that those characters live in. And this is not. It's really uplifting. And it's like, hey, there is hope. Like,
and which is funny because the setting is World War I, which is very grim. Right.
Super grim.
Yeah, so I honestly, I'm kind of fine with them doing this take. And it's there are moments in Wonder Woman where I felt inspired by her, where I was like, you know, hey, she's doing the right thing no matter damn what. I liked that. But I guess I haven't – go ahead.
And there's a part right before the final battle starts where she has a crisis of faith and – she watches, you know, Steve and his band of misfit, like, spy buddies go off, like, and try and stop this chemical warfare item from being dispersed. And, like, that's, like, really inspiring as well, where it's like, hey, like, you know, sometimes we have to do it ourselves. and like the heroes maybe don't always, like, they're not fully always on board, but she sees that and it takes her a minute, but then she's able to like really realize that, you know, I have to keep fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. I like all these things. I'm just going to take a step back, though, because I have not given my actual thoughts on the movie yet, which is I think it is a fairly average superhero movie with one great scene in the middle of it. I mean, despite the fact I'm saying I liked the movie, and I liked their take on the hero in it. I found that refreshing. But the nuts and bolts of this thing, the parts of it, it's almost a Marvel formula, almost. And it's just,
It's not even necessarily the Marvel formula. It is the superhero
it's the formula. Yeah, it's the
going
formula.
Back to like the original Superman. Like,
I'm just saying though, look, this thing has a very high Rotten Tomato rating. It got a lot of hype from people over the weekend. It's doing good business, and I'm happy for all that. But I think people get a little hyperbolic about it because, dude, this is not the Dark Knight to me. This is like levels and levels below what the Dark Knight did. To me, it's just a standard superhero movie, but it had one scene in the middle, and I think when I say to you the middle, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, where I was wowed.
Well, it's
I got chills.
I'm going to assume it's when she steps out of the trench all through the village scene. Like,
yeah, the no man's land scene.
Yeah.
That part, I mean, I was like emotionally moved by that scene. And I can only imagine what it's like for someone who went in with all these expectations. Like, if you're a woman who's like, you know, how come I don't get to see women superheroes on screen? And that scene was an emotional, like, release, you know? And it was for me as a white male watching it. I was, like, blown away by it. I was like, wow, this is great.
It is a great piece of film. Like, that stretch of the film, which is, like, it's a good 10, 15 minutes. It is a great stretch of superhero cinema.
In my opinion, in an otherwise pretty average movie. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I think over time, the opinions on this movie will settle down a little bit. And it'll be saying, it was a good job, it was a good first start. But I don't think that, I don't know, to me, it's fairly standard, dude. Especially once you get to the end, like it's just like,
That's where I really like the opening, which is pretty standard. Like, you know, kid, she finds out that she's a hero. She goes off to do her thing.
The young version of Wonder Woman is very cute too.
Yeah, she's super cute. Like that whole, I enjoy the visual stuff they do. Patty Jenkins, I believe that's the director. Has some visual flares that she uses throughout the film, but a lot in the early going where she's showing the Amazons like fighting, and she will slow down scenes. She'll slow down like acts that they are doing in certain points, so like a cool leg sweep or like backflips and stuff, like cool visual style to all that. But yeah, you're right. It's completely kind of like standard superhero stuff up until then. I think the second act is really strong, which includes like that scene we were just talking about. And then I think the third act is really weak. Like it relies too much on CG in that final battle. I don't necessarily feel that final battle is like that second act fight, the trench fight through the village is so strong that like her fight with Ares at the end is weak. Like it's not great, which is kind of a shame.
Yeah. The ending, I swear to God, it's almost like obligatory at this point with these movies. Like they feel like they have to have this big, stupid, over-the-top ending. Like, and it's just, like, We Hate Movies, they'll always describe it as, like, it's like 18 9/11s. Like, that's how right. All these, or like a beam is coming out of the sky going to blow up the world. And this is not quite that, but it pretty much is. Like, and I guess without spoiling it, I did not like the villains in the movie. And I did not like the villain at the end, and I especially did not like how he looked at the end, this like suit of armor type thing that they have going on, mm-hmm. like some Dark Souls shit, like he looked ludicrous, like just ridiculous. And it's a letdown for a movie that is pretty confident in what it's, I mean, I guess if you're going back to the very basic formula, then that's the end, that's the ending you have, but
and
you could have done something better.
I don't know a lot about, like, for Wonder Woman, who is always considered part of the DC Trinity, like it's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. I know very little about like her as a character outside of like being part of the Justice League. I don't know anything about her like villains gallery.
I don't either.
And evidently Ares is like a huge villain for her. And like, yes, I totally agree. It's like absurd. Like he's in this like goofy Spartan helmet and
Yeah, I mean,
it's dumb.
what's the actor's name? David, is it David Thewlis?
David Thewlis,
Yeah,
who I like.
he's great. He is
We'll talk
actually
about
really
him in a
good.
little
Yeah,
bit.
but like, just the image of that guy in like a fucking goofy ass suit of armor
It's
is,
clowny.
yeah. I just, and we're getting the spoilers here a little bit, but just I would prefer if the God of Ares thing was not correct, because this is a movie about she believes that the bad things that humans do, the wars we get in, is caused by the God of War. And the movie kind of questions whether she is right or not about that.
Right.
And it's, to me, would have been, and it's getting more into a gray area, but to me, it would have been way more interesting if the God of War was not real. Like if it was all bullshit. They kind of like do this weird thing where they split the difference and try to have it both ways, where he says, well, I don't really force the humans to do anything evil in Star Wars. I just whisper into their ear, which is very much like Iago from Shakespeare's Othello. Like the bad guy in Othello would say, I didn't make anyone do anything, I just whispered in their ear. And that's kind of what he says here, which I like. I dig that, but it would have been cooler if it was totally fake altogether and she had to like wrestle with the fact that there is no God of War. People just do this, like they fight wars because of whatever, but they're still worth helping. But maybe like you said, maybe like that is totally out of line with what is in the comics, and so you just kind of have to deal with what the source material is. I don't know.
I think they wanted to double down on the fact that she is a demigod. She is the daughter of Zeus, and I think they wanted to like make that like th and I don't think they needed to make it as apparent as they bang it in, but I think that they wanted to kind of drive that point home again. Like, she is more special than like you're thinking. Like, and it's like I don't know why you need that because she's already proven that she can do these amazing things and that she has powers that are well beyond humanity, but.
Yeah, I guess to me, in a movie like this, like if I'm accepting one thing that's completely outrageous, which is her as this god, I would almost prefer everything else to be as grounded as possible. But whatever. I mean, kind of splitting hairs on that, but like, just to me overall, it goes back to my original point. I thought it's fairly average with a really great scene in the middle. And I guess the other thing I really like about it is the chemistry between her and Chris Pine, and he kind of plays the damsel character in this. And he's actually a highlight of the movies. Like, actually, both of them. I love Gal Gadot and him in this, and the chemistry between them and him is like just. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of chemistry between them, and they do play up like the difference between him going, "This is what we have to do because it's the smart thing to do," and her going, "No, this is what we're doing because it's right." All that stuff I really love, but I just felt like the movie, for one, is very. It felt long, unlike Pirates to me, which they're kind of near similar lengths, but like Pirates to me felt like it moved quick. It was a snappy pace. Wonder Woman, I felt like we're over an hour in, and finally we get this really awesome action scene. Pirates starts off with one. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I have enough problems with it where to me I'm saying it's a pretty average movie with some great stuff in it. I don't know how you come down in the end. I know you said you liked it, which we both like it.
Yeah.
I have a lot of issues with it, I guess.
It is like I think I have some of the same issue. I think I might end up scoring it maybe a little bit higher than you, but it was interesting. I had this conversation with my wife on the way home and from the movies, and I was like, yeah, it felt a little bit long. Like they could have trimmed like 20 minutes here or there. And she's like, really? Like, she's like, I could have watched more of that. Like, okay. Like, I mean, it affected her in a different way. And like the kids really like, especially my daughters, they really liked it. Like,
yeah,
I am certainly looking at it from somebody who sees every fucking superhero movie that comes out.
Yes.
And two, like I have heroes that like I can relate to on a regular basis, like, and this is certainly something different for them. So that was cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can never put my shoes or put myself in the shoes of a woman who's seeing this, who's never had like a big screen. I mean, there's been stuff, but like nothing like this, and they pulled it off pretty well, you know. So great, that's fine. I just. At the end of the day, I'm not gonna score on a curve because of that. It's just, to me,
that's fair.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. You've proven you can make a girl superhero movie that is basically like the guys. But
well, and outside of that, they've proven that they can make a
money,
good
yeah.
superhero movie. Well, and money, but they've proven that they can make a good superhero movie that people like across the board, so because even though we both like Man of Steel, like that is a really divisive film, and obviously Batman vs Superman and Suicide Squad not scored very well at all. So
yeah, I did go see this one on my own, so I'll be interested to see what my girlfriend thinks of it when she sees it. But she's not a big movie person to begin with, and probably definitely not super weird movies. But I'll be interested to see her reaction to it. But for me, it's a 3.
I'm just a little bit above you. I'm at a 4. So
yeah.
It's the second best superhero movie this year, to me, and it is definitely better than Guardians. So
the last 3 things, like what you just said right there, that's exactly what our friend Matt said. He's like it's just behind Logan. And definitely better than Guardians. So
yeah,
I have not seen Guardians yet, but yeah, this is not quite Logan. But it's also a different movie than Logan. Logan's a small kind of road movie with some great violence. It's like, you know, it's almost apples and oranges, but I'll take that over this.
Sure.
So that's Wonder Woman. Chris, you actually saw a new movie that I've been actually looking forward to seeing, but it's been hard to get a hold of, and that is it's a French horror film.
Yes.
Called Raw.
Raw. French horror, first time director, Julia DeCorno. I think we talked on this show about how like European horror has been really
very strong.
Yeah. This is a weird movie. I'll give you the basics on it. It's a girl, she's going to veterinary school. She's young, must be like 18, 19 years old. She's going to a veterinary school where her sister goes. It's like a family tradition to go to this school. And they have a hazing ritual. Like, I guess the first week they're there, they go through this freshmen go through like a hazing. They're called rookies or whatever, and they have to treat the seniors with like more respect and kind of do whatever they want. One of the things they do at the start of that is they pour like animal blood on them from like a balcony, and then they're kind of stained. So if you've seen the trailer, that's kind of what you've seen, like the blood pouring down her face. She is a vegetarian though, grown up as a vegetarian all through her life. And then one of the hazing things that they bring up with her is they make her eat like some meat. I think it's like pig kidney or something like that. Like it was gross, whatever it was. And her sister like makes her eat it. and she instantly throws up. But after that, she kind of starts having this craving for meat, basically raw meat. Like she's like sniffing around her refrigerator, eating raw fish, and she's going through this weird transformation where she wants to like sniff meat and touch meat and eat it all the time.
And she's like a freshman in college at this point.
Yes, she's a freshman in college. And then something weird happens with her and her sister. They have a weird relationship back and forth. And something weird happens, and she ends up eating human flesh.
Yeah, I kind of figured the direction it's going. Yeah.
And and so now she kind of has this, like, carnivorous cannibal like thing going on.
Yeah.
Where she just, like, not only does she want meat, but now she wants human meat. She ends up, like, it starts becoming, like, a sexualized thing with her, where she...
Well, it feels to me like an obvious metaphor for, like, a sexual awakening at that age, yeah, or whatever. Like,
one, yeah, and
discovering your...
And it ties with both of these, because she's a virgin when she gets to college.
Yeah.
And this hazing ritual ends up putting her with this other guy, and so she ends up being covered in blue paint, and this guy's covered in yellow paint, and the seniors tell them to go into this room and don't come out until they're both green. Like, so, like, obviously, like, they're getting intimate in there, and she ends up biting this guy, which starts where the freakiness really starts to play out, and she then has sex, which, if you've seen the trailer, like, you kind of see... And all the time she's, like, you know, going at it with this guy, she's trying to bite him, but he kind of keeps pushing her away until she finally just, like, bites herself and kind of, like, gnawing on herself. And so it just keeps playing out, like, as her, you know.
Is this, like, body horror?
Not, I mean, there's some gross shit. But no, it's weirdly like, I mean, you kind of said it earlier, like, it's this kind of sexual coming of age thing. And it kind of works, yeah, with both of those. Like, that's what this is. Like, it's this weird coming of age as she molds into being a woman and a cannibal. Like,
have you seen Ginger Snaps?
I believe I saw the first one years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of like how the theme of that is. It's like she becomes a werewolf, but it's kind of the same metaphor, you know? Yeah.
So this is, like, played very, very dry. Like, it's not... It's almost not a... It's more of a drama than anything else. It just,
yeah,
has, like, this horrific kind of...
Like an indie drama.
Yeah, it's like an indie drama with this horrific kind of underlying theme of cannibalism to it. And so there's an interesting twist in the middle that ties in with her sister and her. And then there is something that happens in the ending of the film that is just like, oh... That's where this whole thing was going. That's why these things were, like, it's really interesting. I thought it was really well done. It's a strange movie, though. Like, it is more indie drama than horror film. Like, it is not a scary film, but it is at times hard to watch.
Like, unsettling or yeah, just maybe, like, icky.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, the where she first tastes, like, human flesh is really disturbing, and yeah, there's some weird shit that happens in this movie. Is there
super gross chewing noises as she's eating the stuff?
No, there's, like, this. So when she is having sex, there's, like, the worst panting ever. Like, it's, like, really, like, that's, like, really bad sound. But there's some cool soundtrack stuff in this. But no, there's not, like, the weird, like, slurping and like you would expect from, like, somebody like that's not there. It's played very straight. in that respect. So it's a weird thing. It's a really weird thing. I liked it. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's holding like an 81 Metacritic score. Evidently, like, people like were so disgusted by it, they walked out of screenings of it.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by that shit, but I don't know if it's just I've become so desensitized to stuff that just doesn't hit me that way anymore. But it's a fascinating movie that I ultimately ended up liking. So it's just kind of disturbing.
All
less
right,
more
rating?
Disturbing than scary. I'm gonna go with a 3 today. I think last night I might have gone with a 4, but
could fluctuate.
Yeah, it depending upon like the more I think about it, it's like I don't know. And then like I bounced back and forth on it a couple times today, where I'm like, yeah, that was really good, and like I think there are parts of it that are really cool, but there are other parts that are this is a strange movie, strange pace to it.
Well, I'm going to see it regardless because a horror fan, whatever. Yeah. But I just had one, I guess, final question about it. Like,
yeah.
Does it feel like a slow, boring indie movie, or is it like you're engaged in the story, you're liking it, and it's just super weird?
So, yeah, I could see somebody watching this movie and being like, this is a slow, boring indie movie. Okay. And I don't know if some of it was I knew what the themes of it were. I knew where it was going to eventually get to. But it doesn't take that long before they get to the where she starts changing after having eaten meat. But it's not like, you know, back to back to back with the gross stuff. There's like there's a lot of scenes of talking and her dealing with her relationship with her gay roommate and her relationship with her sister. And there's a lot of like that going on, as well as like her changes in her appetite and in her like kind of sexual awakening as well. So,
well, I'll be interested to see it. As of right now, the only way for me to do it would be to just rent it digitally.
Yeah, that was how I did it. I rented it on Amazon. So,
I think I might break down and do that because it's not happening on disc, at least not on Netflix anytime soon. So, I guess I have just one or two things I would like to end talking about.
Yeah.
Mainly The Leftovers ended this last week. It had its series finale after 3 seasons.
Okay. And you started watching that this year.
Yeah. I liked the trailers for season 3. Like I thought they were cool before whatever the hell I was watching on HBO at the time. And Brian had always, our friend Brian had always like talked it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, it's only 2 seasons to catch up on and I could watch it. So yeah, I watched the first 2 seasons and I watched this one live as it was happening. And I'd say that if you're interested in the premise of it at all, like it's a total of 28 episodes, not bad for a full series. But anyways, yeah, I thought that I really liked the series finale of the show. Which is weird because it's like an hour and 10 minutes long, I want to say. And for the first 50 minutes or so, I thought it really sucked. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, you don't really understand what's going on. It's a very weird show to begin with. And just the way that this episode plays out, it's like, you're like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And it's kind of slow and boring. You're like, this is the final episode. What is this? And then it gets to the last 20 minutes. And I think that the show paid off pretty big time in a lot of ways, like in ways that, that you would not have expected. Like, and that's in this last 20 minutes of the last episode. But just like things like the writer of it, Damon Lindelof, who did Lost.
Yeah.
And he did he wrote Prometheus. Yep. And he's written a bunch of stuff. But like the writer of it has said in interviews all along, he's never going to explain what happens to all the people who disappear in the first episode, like, you know, the premise of the show. And not to spoil anything, but I'm just saying, I got answers I was not expecting to get. I was like, whoa. And these last 20 minutes in this finale, they're like very emotional. Like, I was emotionally affected by it. And it's all accomplished through a close-up performance of one actor. So it's just like camera on her face as she's talking for most of it. But there's no flashbacks. There's no music even, which is it's just like mind-blowing because like this show has very effective, like depressing music on it. So if they wanted to get the emotions out of you, they just play that fucking that song over any emotional scene. And here they let it go without the music. And it's just her face and you hearing her story. And it, I thought it was pretty masterful wrap-up for, I think, a really fun, overlooked, super weird series. I'd say it's definitely worth it. I think you would like it, Chris. I don't know if you would be blown away by it overall, but it's just because the investment is so small, I would recommend it to anybody who likes weird stories or like Twilight Zone type stuff or Stephen King. You know, it's even though the show ultimately, like, even though it has all these weird, strange, supernatural elements, it is like a drama.
Okay.
It uses that stuff in the context of a drama. I loved it. And another cool thing, like one more thing I'll say about this finale is, so you get this long monologue from this character, and I thought it was really great, and she kind of spells a lot of things out that you wanted to know, and you find out what happens to like characters over the course of like decades. And then afterwards, I see online that almost the majority of people think that the whole story she tells at the end is a lie. And so it's really fun. It's like kind of one of those endings like the ending of Sopranos where everyone's kind of debating, at least like the three people that watch the leftovers are all debating about was she telling the truth or not at the end. And it's the show leaves it open enough and it raises enough questions enough to where the point where I did not question at all as I'm watching this that what she was saying could be false at all. And then I see all these people talking about it online and they've almost flipped me over to the other side where I'm like, yeah, everything she said was bullshit. It's a cool, in my opinion, that's a successful ending to a show where you got people talking and people will be discussing it for years, except not as many people as with The Sopranos.
Okay.
But yeah, another TV show I just wanted to mention was Fargo, which is like, I think I'd said in previous episodes of this that it was the one show this season that I was kind of questioning. It's off to a really slow start. It is a very slow burn, but now I think we're in the third to last episode. It could have been one of the best episodes of the show that I've seen. It could have been one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen. Like the first 20 minutes are like this masterclass and just like crazy violence and suspense, using almost no dialogue. It's just like 20 minutes of people getting hunted by people in the woods. Yeah, just crazy. And it's just the episode where like a lot of things started to pay off, almost to the point where it felt like a finale, but yet there's two more episodes. So yeah, I've turned around on Fargo this week with this crazy, crazy awesome episode.
That's cool. I still have to watch the first two seasons of that, but
the good thing for you on this with Fargo is it's kind of like Black Mirror in that you can start wherever you want, except you have to pick a season because, you know, each one is its own
okay
like story.
So they just happen to all take place in that town?
In that part of the country, yeah. Minnesota. And there are like tangential connections between the seasons, but you could totally watch one season on its own. And it doesn't matter. It won't affect how much you enjoy it at all. It's a cool show. And I would say check out season one or two. I would say check out season one. I think that is my favorite. But for you, Chris, even though season three is a slow burn, it might be a tough sell as your first season.
Right.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is a big character in it.
Okay.
Almost, I'd say almost at this point in the show, the main character. So, and she's great in it. Like, everyone's great in it. I think God, I'm blanking on his name right now. The hell is his name? A guy from Trainspotting. He was also in episode one of Star Wars. Ewan McGregor.
McGregor.
Yeah. He is kind of like the main character throughout most of it, but now it's kind of definitely shifted to her.
Okay.
So maybe that would be like, I know you like her as an actress. Maybe season three would be like the one hopping on. But yeah, it doesn't matter. You could do it in any order you want.
All
It's a
right,
great show, too.
I might try and get to that. I know I can definitely watch the Leftovers because I have HBO Go, so I can
Well, do you
definitely
have
catch up on that.
like cable, right? Like you have
Yeah,
FX.
yeah.
You should have on demand, I would imagine, at least this season of Fargo, I would
Okay.
hope. But anyways, that's kind of all I had to really talk about this week. Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on? I know we're running late on time, but
I maybe just really quick. I saw The Island of Dr. Moreau from
yes.
1996.
I have not seen this, but I kind of saw you commenting about it.
Wow,
Piqued my interest.
it is a mess of a movie. Stars Val Kilmer, David Thewlis, who he was just in Wonder Woman, and Marlon Brando. Yeah, those are the three big ones here. It is based on H.G. Wells's 1896 novel of the same name, but it has been modernized, so it takes place in like the 90s. Wow, what a mess of a movie this is.
Spectacular mess.
Yeah, it is strange. Like Marlon Brando dresses up like the Pope in the like, and he is almost in like a Pope mobile type, the carrying case on the back of an SUV, except he is also in like complete white face. Like he has painted himself white and like whiter than Marlon Brando is, like almost like if you were to take a sunscreen and not actually apply it, but just like dab it on yourself so it became like this white powdery type. Oh, he's a weird freaky man in this. He plays Dr. Moreau. Val Kilmer plays his assistant Montgomery. Val Kilmer is completely off his rocker in this as well. I think this might have been the point where Kilmer actually went crazy. And I don't think he ever recovered after this. This was right after he had filmed Batman Forever, where he played Batman.
He's saying this is like a Joker type situation with like
Yeah,
Heath
like
Ledger, where he just kind of like went off the deep end.
he has completely lost it in this movie. It pretty closely follows the H.G. Wells book, but wow, what a weird, weird thing this is. And
It sounds
evidently,
magical.
there's also evidently a documentary because I think Richard Stanley was supposed to direct this originally, but he was fired like in the first week of filming, and they brought on John Frankenheimer, who wrapped it up. And so I guess a lot of the issues come from that, but Marlon Brando evidently like a lot of the wackiness was at his request. Like, it's such a weird, weird movie. It's on HBO right now, so if you
Oh.
have HBO Go, you can easily watch it. It is hard to watch anywhere else, evidently, but I'm not sure I would recommend watching it unless you want to watch like a weird '90s, remake take on
On, who
like
wouldn't want to
this.
watch that?
It's so strange. So strange. It's short though. It's like an hour and a half. So if you are up for like an hour and a half of complete weirdness and nothing particularly good, but it's such a strange thing to see Brando and Val Kilmer hamming it up in this way
See,
that
I'm still hanging. I'm still hanging out in that 80s cheese right now.
yeah,
But
so
what made you decide to go to 90s cheese?
all right.
Like, what sparked this?
All right, so after seeing Alien Covenant, I definitely got like this like kind of Dr. Moreau feeling from that. And so I was like, you know what? I know that story. I know the basics of it, but I don't think I've
But
ever
you've never
actually,
seen,
well, I've never actually read the book. Like I know the story, but I never read the book. So I read H.G. Wells's novel, and then I was like, huh. Wow, okay. Marlon Brando, Val Kilmer. They're pretty big. And then I saw that it had a like on IMDb it is holding a 4.4 out of 10, which is
pretty low,
pretty,
yeah.
yeah, that's a rough score. I kind of got to see this. And then I started reading up on it and how it is kind of a mess of a film. And I
Like
was like,
one of those legendary.
yeah. Like that like the production of this movie is
Yeah.
super messed up and was a huge kind of story at the time. I was like, I kind of need to see this now.
Yeah,
And
I kind of need to see it now too, based on just that.
so it's like it's something that like you have these huge actors in it, and just the fact that it was such a messed up kind of production, it was such an interesting thing to kind of try and catch. So but yeah, that's I saw that. I'm gonna give it a 2-star rating because it's watchable.
2-star rating with a strong recommend.
If you are interested in watching some really weird shit,
Okay, I wanted you to sell me on it. I'm sold. Thank you. I will check this out at some point,
yeah, like.
possibly next week.
Yeah, if you get, I'm be totally interested in hearing what you have to say after seeing it, because it is such a weird thing. That's it.
There was one other thing I wanted to touch on, super brief. So yeah, I've been watching like a lot of 80s movies recently, and I found this documentary on Netflix called Electric Boogaloo, which is all about like the rise and fall of Canon Films, which I'm sure you're familiar with that logo and probably attach it to some movies. But yeah, they were like the super low budget studio that made a real kind of big play in Hollywood in the 80s. Like these dudes made, his two cousins made a shitload of money, and they cranked out like 70 films a year, way more than what like a big studio would do. They were mostly below budget and they were shit, but they were turning a profit on it, and they kind of got bigger and bigger, and they kind of got ambitious after a while. And like, so like one of their biggest movies was Masters of the Universe, which I'm sure you remember.
Yes, I have seen that movie.
But like they're trying to compete on the level of the real players in Hollywood, and I mean, you don't see Canon Films anymore, so it falls apart. But
Obviously.
it's just interesting because, like, honestly, a lot of movies that I watched in the 80s were Canon Films. Like, a lot of clips they showed in this, I'm like, man, I remember seeing that. I was totally into all the American Ninja movies, and then like you look back on it, like it's totally silly and ridiculous, but it's, it was part of my childhood and also like an interesting part of film history, how these kind of outsiders almost took over Hollywood by making total trash.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
They did like all the Chuck Norris movies, like Delta Force and shit like that, Missing in Action. I mean, shit, I'm sure you've seen a lot of the ones I just rattled off at the top of my head, right?
I've seen Delta Force.
They did a Indiana Jones complete ripoff called like King Solomon's Mines or some
Oh,
bullshit.
I like that movie.
And I've actually added that in a lot of their movies to my Netflix queue because, for one, like I want to see the American Ninja series again. I had fond memories of that when I was a kid.
And Richard Chamberlain and Sharon Stone were in that. Yeah, I love that movie as a kid.
Sharon Stone was accidentally cast in the movie. It was supposed to be, I want to say, Kathleen Turner from Romancing the Stone. It's just that one of the two guys on the company is like, "Get me that Stone girl, that Stone girl."
And they got the
And so
wrong one.
they thought they were talking about Sharon Stone, but the guy meant the girl from Romancing the Stone. So a lot of fun, like stupid stories like that in there too. Like the guys had like great ambition and they loved movies, but they didn't have like a taste for quality. But honestly, I think they turned out stuff that, I don't know, at least to me, it stands out in my memory. It's just it was fun to see a documentary about that studio,
Yeah.
for sure. So, I mean, if you're into 80s films, and
They
yeah,
did
check
Life
out.
Force too.
Yeah, I wish I've never seen. That's another one on my queue. Have you seen Life Force?
No, I've heard good things about it.
Me too.
He did a lot of stuff though. Like, there's a lot of garbage here.
Yeah, like they were really prolific, but it was mostly like they would make up movies on this, like on the set as they're shooting, making up what's going on, like no script at all. So
It's Superman 4.
yeah, it was honestly, when I was a kid, I loved Superman 4. I'm not gonna lie, I thought it was awesome. Look, I mean, I have not seen it since I was a kid, but I've seen clips of it now, and I'm like, oh my God, I thought that was good. Holy shit. Yeah, that was one of their super huge plays was Superman 4. And these guys are so cheap that they started out with a $25 million budget on that, and they shrunk it to 17. And all these people are getting an interview, and they're like, it looks like shit because they made it like they would a normal canon film, even though this is their shot at greatness. Like they just knew the way that they made movies, which is like cheap and fast, and they still did that. Like even when they got these big properties.
So
Yeah, it's not an amazing documentary, but it's just fun if you're interested in the subject matter.
yeah, no, I like totally am, because I'm like looking over this list. Like, this is where Jean-Claude Van Damme got his start in like American cinema with Bloodsport and
Cyborg.
Cyborg and Kickboxer, which are films that I loved as a kid. Like, and then like we already talked about the Alan Quartermain movies, like the Delta Force. Like, there's a
They were so
stuff.
they're trying to do the old Hollywood model too, where they had a stable of actors, like
Yeah.
like they own Chuck Norris, like how they did way back in the day in Hollywood. Like, I don't know.
Like, yeah, all of his movies would be through them, right? Like,
Yeah, that's what they did. They're like, oh, we got Michael Dudikoff now. He's gonna be big, and they were right on some of the things. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme, I mean, he was for that brief moment a huge
yeah.
star.
Hell yeah. Good decade, like between like 85 and 1995, he was pretty big.
So it's just a fascinating fact, especially for people like us who lived through it and remember it, and like we're fans of that stuff. It's
It's on Netflix, right?
yeah, it's been there forever, and I've had it on my queue forever, and I finally like was like, oh, I'm gonna check this out, and I was like, this is like my childhood. So yeah, I mean, it's not amazing or anything, but like if you're interested in it, definitely like a watch.
All
That's
right.
it. Yeah. So next week, are we gonna have the mummy? I don't know, Chris. I'm a little worried.
Maybe.
Me
I
too.
am more interested in seeing it comes out at night.
If I could find it, yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
if I can find it, I'm definitely going to see that. The Mummy, I love Tom Cruise, but the reviews are brutal.
Yeah, like even for people who are like Tom Cruise and whatnot, like are saying it's just bad. Like, oh man. I mean, I've heard a glimpse. I've seen Jeff Cannata at Slash Film actually liked it.
He
So,
liked it. Okay.
yeah, but he's a very positive person. He's like
Yes,
me,
he
sometimes
is.
optimistic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly all I need is a like for that movie. I just need like a popcorn, like action kind of horror movie. Like, I almost need a Pirates of the Caribbean. Like,
Yeah, I just,
that's what I want from that.
well, I was just gonna say, I just need it not to be a drag. And the Pirates was not a drag. It was
Yeah,
it was lively throughout.
if it's a lively movie, where Tom Cruise is doing Tom Cruise things and there's some cool special effects, that Amanette, whoever plays Amanette, is like super beautiful. So yeah, like I'm kind of okay with it being a bad movie as long as it's entertaining.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to spend, like, if I can find the other one, if I can find it comes out at night, I'm definitely going to take time to see that before The Mummy.
Yeah, same exact boat here, and I'm sure I'll have some other 80s garbage or something for you.
Right. And we'll be back next week, I guess.
Yep.
Movie dudes. Do 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 do.